It's Culture in the Craft podcast, making creative spaces diverse places. You can listen to us on Anchor, Apple, Spotify, or wherever you're listening to this. Please subscribe, share, let us know what you think. Today, we are talking to the amazing production manager at Netflix Animation, Tiara Little. We discussed taking risks, looking at how to enter into the creative industry when there are concerns from parents and friends, and we got an opportunity to dig into the roles and responsibility of those in the creative spaces within leadership / management. This is another two-parter. This is part one. We hope you enjoy the show. It's Laura, and I'm joined by someone really special. We have Tiara Little, who is production manager at Netflix Animation, on the line. Hey, Tiara.
Hello.
How are you?
I'm good. Just enjoying the day so far. How are you?
Very good. I'm sure it's gorgeous over there in LA.
Yeah, nice and sunny. So as long as it doesn't get too hot, I'll be fine.
Well, we're really happy and really, really excited to have you talk to us for our podcast. You have quite a background, having worked through Nickelodeon, the Walt Disney Company, Cartoon Network, and now you're over at Netflix Animation, and particularly as a production manager, I think this is a unique perspective that we could bring to our audience. We have so far spoken to a lot of inspiring artists and creators, so it makes sense for us to speak to the team as a whole and look at the leadership side. Give our audience a little bit of background and set the scene.
Yeah, so I started off at Nickelodeon as an intern, and I was on a preschool show called Wally Kazam. And from there, I was brought on as a PA or a production assistant. Stayed there for a bit, moved over to Cartoon Network to PA there on a show called Mighty Magiswords. And they kind of had like an in-house animation department. So it was like their Flash unit. And we started off with just Magiswords. And then later on, we got another show called Apple and Onion, which I was promoted to coordinator on that show. So it was kind of doing double duty at the time. Spent a few years there, and then went over to Disney TV, where I started working on DuckTales as a production coordinator. And that was a really great, amazing experience, too. And while I was kind of working over there, I had my showrunner, or I guess he wasn't showrunner, but he was like second in command over at Apple and Onion. Mm-hmm. But he got a new show picked up over at Netflix Animation, and they were starting their brand new studio. And so since we had worked together previously, my name came up as someone to bring on to the team to help manage the production side. And that's kind of what brought me over to where I'm at now at Netflix Animation. But pretty much what I do in production is it's a lot more of the management, organizing, scheduling, just really acting as like the glue of the show. So making sure that the creatives have what they need to be successful, and for us to make sure that the showrunner's vision gets made, and also working on the more administrative side and, you know, figuring out like what are the logistics, how do we actually do what we want to do and do it on time. So it's a lot of back and forth, but it kind of helps. I come from a creative background and I've studied animation, so I understand where a lot of our artists are coming from, and I feel like that just kind of helps when you want to, you know, like defend your team or stand up for them, and you learn which battles to fight for and which ones that we are compromising on, and it's all to make the show great and make it the best that it can be. So we're all on the same team. It's just I help to figure out how do we do it in a way that makes sense and won't take 10 years to do.
I completely hear what you're saying coming from the production side myself, and I think it's really interesting a couple of things that you mentioned there, so it would be good to delve into it a little bit. You mentioned that you come from an artistic background. Can we hear a little bit more about that? Because I think you bring a very interesting perspective to the leadership / management side of things.
Yeah, I started off when I wanted to get into animation, I was convinced I wanted to be an artist, so up until that point, that's all I've been focusing on. I went to the Rhode Island School of Design, and that's where I studied animation there. And I just was really hyper-focused on that. But At the same time, while I love doing art and creating my own work, I also like to be a part of everything. You know, I want to do a little bit of backgrounds, a little bit of color styling and character design. And usually once you get into like TV animation, you kind of pick a department and that's where you stay in, and you don't really float between all of them. So I was pretty confused on like, well, which one do I pick at the end? So I've worked all this way and, you know, now it's time to make a decision. And that's when I heard about the production internships at Nickelodeon. And so I figured that would be a good way to kind of see how it works inside of a studio and to figure out, well, I can see how, you know, this type of artist works and figure out if that's a good fit for me. But it ended up happening that I got into production. I was like, oh, my personality fits this side of the industry a lot better because it gives me that little bit of everything that I was looking for. You know, my hand is kind of in every part of the process, not like physically doing the work, but I get to see each show go from start to finish and just kind of seeing how it takes place and how it all unfolds. It's just so fascinating to me. It makes me so excited every time because you see it at like such a rough stage to begin with, and it's just an idea.
Yeah.
And then seeing it come back from overseas and it has the music and it's like final picture, it kind of blows my mind every single time. So I ended up, you know, following production, and I still do my own creative work on the side, but I keep it more for myself. I think I've just realized that if I'm going to be creative, for me, it's like very mentally exhausting, and I put a lot of myself into my work. So I would want to be working on my own projects and doing it at my own time and speed. And it just made more sense to keep that side for myself. And then I help other people bring their work to life on the big screen.
Ah, that's a lovely way of putting it. The fact that you have described seeing something bloom, realizing something for a collective ambition, is just such an awe-inspiring, it's such a privileged journey to be able to oversee from beginning to end. And being in a production role and management, it allows you to get a view from afar and see every step of the way. And I think when you are watching something grow, it's like a little baby every time, seeing it as a child and then it grow into its adulthood and get released into the world and received. It's beautiful. I always feel really impressed, and I always say to people, to me, it's always about the journey, the process, and how everyone contributed to it in order to make it come to life. It's so much fun. Do you find that there are aspects of having this artistic side to you when you're trying to do work? You talked a lot about being able to put yourself in the shoes of the artists.
Yeah, I would say that, you know, having come from doing art, you know, you understand that it's very hard to, we're asking people to be, you know, constantly pumping out this creative work, you know, however many hours a day for 5 days a week. And that's, for anybody, that's really exhausting to do. And it is asking a lot of people. And so keeping that in mind, what I try and do on my end is just find ways that I can support them to make that process easier, and understanding that, you know, there are going to be some days where, you know, they might not be hitting the marks that, yeah, if you're doing the math and technically they should have a quota of what they're reaching all the time. You know, if these are people, you have to treat them as people. Mm-hmm. So, you know, if we're approaching it like, oh, well, they're just machines, they just have to pump out work, you know, you're really kind of ignoring a big part of them. And I don't see how you can get the best work from them if you're just running them into the ground without taking into consideration how they're feeling. Or, you know, we set up these processes, but are they actually working? Or is it just making stuff harder for them? So it's a lot of just talking with them and just figuring out like what's working, what's not. And, you know, sometimes I feel like we'll just kind of dump a lot of work on people and be like, well, they can figure it out. It should be fine. It's not that much. But when you're actually talking to them, what seems simple for us could actually take a lot of time on their end. And it's one of those things where like they might not just come to you and say it. They, you know, they see it's a job and they feel that they're just expected to do it. But that can lead to a lot of burnout. I have had friends who are artists who were like, you know, by the time they get home, they can't even work on their own art. And you want to try and help them find that balance. And so, you know, I just try and think of, if I was in that position, how would I want to be treated? What would I do? And try and put that forward in terms of how I manage and, you know, go about supporting the team to make all of this stuff happen.
That makes a lot of sense. And I think it is very easy to sit in a room and push schedules around and manipulate information to hit a target, say a budget or a timeline or both, and then hand it off to people in a way that's naive to the fact that, as you say, yeah, they're human beings. Do you think, and I'm assuming that most people in your team are aware of your creative background, do you think that earns you that extra bit of respect from them? They see that you have a deeper insight because you have been in their shoes?
Yeah, it's a good question. It's hard to say because I don't think all of my team always know that I have this background. Sometimes it comes as a surprise to people. But I think what kind of gets a lot of respect from people is that, you know, I do try and be very genuine when I'm talking with them. And I am very interested in learning about how they're feeling. And I think that's a really big part of it. It's just like, you know, the checking in and not only going to people when I need something, what I can be doing better. I think that's what kind of helps grow that respect. I think having the creative background helps, but my creative background is still a little bit different because I haven't been doing it on, you know, a professional stage like they're doing. Mm. So the demands that I got as an artist were pretty different than what we're asking of them, but I'm seeing what it is from the other end, and I can kind of figure out like, okay, well, I know that if I were in that position, you know, if I'm being asked to make X amount of designs and I only have like 3 days to do it, even I know from not having done the work, that is a lot of work. And so it's just trying to figure that out. And I think just being there for the team and letting them know that you do actually care about what's happening to them and that you do want to hear their thoughts so that you can make things better, I think that's kind of what gives me more respect in my position.
Oh, that's a very, very good answer, to be honest, because it does sound like it's more a case of the authentic human side of when you work within a team in any situation is being considerate of others' needs and vice versa, to be able to do something together rather than looking at it as a top down. You have been given a task to achieve and you're handing out these individual parts of it to people and just letting them get on with it until a set point and then asking for everything to come back. It feels like there's a lot of camaraderie and there has to be a lot of soft skills. Mm-hmm. So to that point, would you say there are particular characteristics you think really stand you in good stead in a production capacity that others listening to this just get to know and think, oh, if I'm interested in moving into this particular part of the creative space, what skills should I look to improve upon?
Yeah, I would say that a lot of it, you know, it is just the people skills aspect of it. So, you know, how you talk to someone and making sure that you're actually listening to them. Also being very organized and following through is a really big thing that is important on both, you know, a production side and on a creative side. So making sure that you're someone who will do as they say, and it's not just kind of, you know, putting words out there and they don't really follow through on any of it. That usually doesn't work out too well. You know, being able to problem solve. A lot of it is just kind of figuring out, you know, what are my options? Because you'll be given these different types of limitations and it's all figuring out like, how can I work within this? And so I think a lot of times we get wrapped up in what we can't do and that kind of clouds all the things that we can. And so it's getting better at like thinking more on your feet, especially in like a manager position of knowing what to prioritize and delegate. When you shift from being something like a PA or a PC into a manager position, you have to get used to not being the one who's doing everything yourself. And you have to start looking more at the big picture. And that can be a bit hard because we're so used to being hyper-focused on like, well, I know I have this to-do list of tasks and they can all get done today. And I know what my plan is. But I feel like once you hit management, it's kind of a mix of that. So you know what you need to do today, but you also need to be looking at, well, what do I need to look at for next week, next month, you know, next year. So it's a lot of more like macro and micro planning. And in a lot of like forecasting or predicting what could happen. And if that is going to happen, what can I kind of put in place so that either it doesn't happen or, you know, if it's inevitable that it's going to happen, that it's not as bad. So it's, you know, planning ahead, but also knowing what to do on the spot when things go wrong and you're just like, I need to figure this out now. You know, being able to quickly adjust to any types of new changes, being open to learning, you know, new softwares, new programs. I think just kind of coming into it with like an approach of I'm just going to try and learn as much as I can and constantly checking in with yourself to see where your own strengths and weaknesses might lie and figuring out, okay, what can I work on here? You know that you're not too detail oriented. That's going to be a pretty big thing because there's a lot of tracking in production. There's a lot of designs and assets that you have to be aware of and what stage they're at. So, you know, what are some systems you can put in place so that you have better control and a better visual of everything that's going on? So it is like a mix of a lot of different things. I've heard recently people calling it saying that production is like customer service where, you know, you have to be able to please people and meet these expectations. But, you know, there is that, like I was saying, that organizing and kind of scheduling aspect of it. So it kind of brings it all together into like one bundle that you have to work on.
Yeah, it's quite a set of skills and traits, and then also working alongside, I guess, different types of personalities. So knowing how they like to operate and how they operate at their best. Since we are on this conversation, and I'm so super fortunate to get a chance to speak to you as a production person within a behemoth like Netflix animation, maybe we can get into the reads of production, because I don't know if a lot of our listeners are familiar with this side of the pipeline within a creative field. If we look at, say, you mentioned production assistant, production coordinator, and now you are production manager, how would you say, in a general sense, the responsibilities differ?
The best way that it's been described for me, and which I feel is pretty in line with what I experience as I've been kind of working my way through production, is that a production assistant is kind of like they focus on the day to day. Production coordinator is looking from week to week. Production manager would be month to month. And your line producer is looking year to year. So you're all working together to make sure that from an administrative standpoint, the show has what it needs. And it's usually just being the middleman for a lot of stuff. If you're looking at the production assistants or production coordinators, you know, there's a lot of tracking and scheduling in terms of setting up meetings, handling pitches or design handouts. So they're kind of more in that day-to-day of on the ground floor, helping to support any of the designers or directors. And then once you get to production manager and line producer, we kind of more are stepping in to like help guide and to help, you know, support the team. So, you know, we're not so much in every meeting, but like we might be more of a fly on the wall in the meeting just to make sure everything's running smoothly. Or if you need that kind of extra push from higher up, that's kind of what we're there for. And we also act as like the in-between from our team to like the executives network. So we have a lot more high level conversations. Again, we're looking at big picture stuff and, you know, dealing with hiring and contracts and just anything that long term needs to be taken care of. That's where I feel like a lot of the focus goes to. We do step in every now and then when we're like, okay, something's not going right. And that's when we kind of come together to problem solve as a team. And we kind of will act as like the catalyst to either adjust the system that we're like, you know, this part of the pipeline isn't working. We need to change it up. So we might go and talk to like the directors or the showrunner to figure out like, okay, well, what do you need? What's going on here? And to try and get the full picture. But I feel like from a management perspective and just thinking of my own team, we rely on them pretty heavily to just keep us informed with if they sense something is going wrong, to just flag it so that if we know we need to get involved, we can get involved sooner rather than later. But for the most part, we're pretty hands-off with them. We found that, you know, our team right now, they're like super capable and they're really great at just taking initiative and just doing whatever needs to be done. They don't wait to be told to do anything, which is amazing. So they're really great at just like, you know, if they sense something's off, either they escalate it up to us and say, hey, like, we need your help. Or they're like, you know, I think I can figure this out, and they'll, you know, see what they can do. And if it gets to a point where they need the help, and that's when we step in. But for the most part, you know, our PAs, they're helping just with everybody. So whoever needs like with note taking, and sometimes we have like decorating, or if we're trying to plan something and we need some extra help, like they'll step in and help with that. And our coordinators are doing more with tracking our designs or storyboards, animatics. And I am really just supporting my line producer and kind of being a middleman again between, you know, our PAs and PCs and line producers. And sometimes she'll have her own stuff that she needs to be focusing on. And of course, driving the entire ship. She's who put the team together. So, you know, she's already thinking out ahead of, okay, how can we get like another season? Do we need more people on the team? And just being there for us when we need her.
Sounds like a really awesome team that you've got there.
Yeah, no, I love them.
That's nice. It's really great when you all get on, and also each person's role fits really nicely into everyone else. But I know it takes a lot of work to get to that particular point. It's something that grows and evolves with time as you experience projects together.
Yeah, it takes time. And, you know, something that's pretty common is like you'll work on one show and it's not too uncommon that you find people that you like to work with and you get to another place. And the moment you get a chance to put your own team together, you already know who you want. And that's how I feel like our team unfolded. Our line producer had a pretty good idea of who she felt like would make a really strong team. And so she just has a great eye for like finding great people. And so we're lucky. She kind of like set it all up and now it's just a perfect puzzle put together. And it's been great so far.
Wow, that's really cool. Shout out to, what's her name? I'm assuming it's her.
Yeah, her name's Amanda McCann. She's amazing.
You're amazing, Amanda. Shout out. So we at Culture in the Craft, we're really keen on sharing exactly the types of information that you've mentioned so far. However, we do want to get really focused, hyper-focused on the experiences of minority, underrepresented cultures, because we see within our respective areas a lack of representation. And we always want to ask guests that we have on our podcast, so how do you find representation within the space on your journey within the industry today?
For me, I would say that it hasn't been anything that's been surprising. I would say it's definitely getting better in its own ways, but I just personally feel like more can be done. I would say, you know, I'm used to being like one of one on at most crews that I've been on. And I think right now, a lot of the studios there is a lot of talk about diversity and inclusion and wanting to get more diverse hires and seeing what they can do. But I think in terms of actually seeing it, a lot of what the studios have is like their long-term plans. And while long-term plans are great, I think for the people that are in the studio currently, it can be hard for them to like visualize that. And so they might feel like not much is really being done, because if everything is like 5-10 years out, and they're not getting any direct, you know, proof, or there are no programs that are showing like that are addressing the short term and like the people who are currently there, it doesn't really, you know, make them feel better. So I would say it's in terms of them bringing more diverse groups in, it's happening. It's been a process. I would definitely love to see more. I think the studios could be doing more in terms of outreach and, you know, recruiting and training. I've always felt like part of it, you know, it's like we want diverse hires, but there is like a big gap in between. Diverse hires will usually get written off because the experience is always brought up and people feel like, oh, well, they don't have enough experience yet. You know, a lot of people don't want to be like the first shows. They want somebody who's like already been working for a while, which I mean, from a creative standpoint, like I totally understand you don't want to have to teach on the job. But at the same time, if nobody's giving the first chance, there's no way they can get that experience. So if that keeps coming up as a problem, as, you know, well, they're just not ready yet, they're not experienced, then as a studio, for any studio, I feel like we have to ask, well, then what are we doing to help them get ready? Are we providing any resources or programs or training or opportunities for them to get to where we need them to be? And if we're not, then it doesn't feel like it's a fair excuse to say, well, they don't have the experience. They still have work to do, because not everyone's going to have that opportunity to go to art school and get the training that they need. Or, you know, they might be in an area that just doesn't have a lot of animation or art related stuff. So I just feel like there's a lot of factors to it that, it'd be great to have more conversations about. And that's where I feel like folding in the employees of the studios would really help out with that, because, you know, a lot of us have been through it. So we're talking from like a very personal standpoint on, well, here's what I think would help or what I wish I had, and then kind of going from there. But, you know, it's slow going, but things are happening. And hopefully over time, you know, you'll see across the board at all studios, more diverse creators and showrunners, producers, just all across animation, just kind of getting in there and really putting down some roots so that they can continue to bring more people in and really, you know, start to change the way this industry is.
For sure. I think there's, as you said, and we have had so many similar conversations here in the UK space, talking about similar things, just so many different ways to look at the issue, and the perspective that you're bringing on getting internal employees to look at supporting the ways in which they're setting up the solutions. So that's a very good one to think about. Another thing that we come up against is within our communities as well, there is a sense that roles outside of the traditional, or should I say real, professions, like lawyer, doctor, these are considered the types of careers that parents, guardians want their children, the younger generation, to pursue. If you come up with, oh, I want to move into the artistic space, you're met with resistance or bafflement, because there's not really that much awareness on how to make a place for yourself in the first instance, and how to be able to sustain and support yourself long term, because we all feel that it comes from a place of love, that it's just the care that people have for those that they look after, to know that they are going to be safe and they're going to be earning enough money to keep a roof over their head and feed those that they love. I think when we spoke a couple of weeks back, I really loved the approach that you took when you talked about the steps to overcome that. Do you want to share how you looked at the problem from that angle and how you managed to navigate around it? Because I think our listeners will really, really benefit from hearing this technique, because it was just genius.
I mean, for the most part, I just try to be very strategic about what I'm doing. So the moment that I realized that I wanted to go into animation, it's kind of like every step that followed after that, I was trying to look at, okay, well, if I do this thing here, how will it help me get to the next step? And so I was always trying to think a few steps ahead. And that sometimes that meant not always doing the thing that seemed most directly related to what I want. So I knew if I kept waiting for the perfect opportunity or job that was like absolutely 100% in line with what I wanted to do, the odds of me finding that is pretty slim, especially starting out. But I think sometimes people will be like, well, it's not what I want to do, so I'm not going to do it. But it's like, that's where you have to be smart about it. You know, just because it's not what you want to do now doesn't mean it's what you'll be doing forever.
I love that. I absolutely love that mindset.
And yeah.
Sorry, I just had to interrupt to say that, because I think it's quite easy to think very linearly. Mm-hmm. And especially nowadays, everything is instant. One minute you have an idea, next minute it's achieved. And to take stock of different pathways, that's really cool.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that's the biggest thing. Like, it's like we all have a lot of the same goal, but how we get there is going to be different for every person. So it's not always going to be a straight line. Sometimes you're going to have to do some curves and go into places and do things that you don't want to do. But I feel like as long as you're kind of checking in with yourself and saying, well, am I still on track towards where I want to end up? And there are other ways you can do outside of, you know, let's say you can't afford to go to art school, so you go to like a community college. That doesn't mean you still can't be doing art related things. So it's just that it falls more on you to figure out what that is and what that looks like. So that's kind of how I would always approach things. And I would just try and figure out like, okay, if I can't do this thing, then what are my other options? And once I kind of got focused on something that I really wanted to do, then I was looking at, well, what do I have to let go of or sacrifice so that I can accomplish this. So when I was looking at art schools, you know, some of my family definitely didn't understand the whole art thing, especially animation. It's like, what even is that? But I was like so set on it. So I just kind of told myself, you know, I'll apply to 2 art schools. And one of the art schools is like my big, like my dream school. And if I can get into any of these art schools, then that means I'm going to go. And so to kind of like help make it easier for my mom, I found an art, well, so RISD, they're right next to Brown University, which is an Ivy League, and you know, you can take classes there. And so that would make it like a bit easier for her to take in if I was able to get into there. The only problem was getting in.
Sure.
So, which of course it was a really hard school to get into. And that's where it kind of fell on me with like, okay, well, what do I need to do to make that happen? If I know this is a school that has, you know, at the time it had a very low like acceptance rate of like, you know, all the people who applied trying to make it happen. And this is me just trying to figure it out on my own. You know, that meant I had to give up, you know, after school, I'd come home and I just lock myself in my room and I would just work on art or like any type of art classes I could take. That's what I would be taking on my weekends. And like, I just channeled all of my energy into that and, you know, doing the essays. And they had like special artist assignments to put into your portfolio. So making sure that I was creating work that, you know, I felt would get me noticed. And that's where I just put a lot of my time. So I wasn't doing a lot of the normal high school stuff that other people were doing probably. But then it paid off because that's what got me into the school. So, you know, it's just kind of weighing the options and seeing if I can't do this, then what can I do? And kind of focusing more on that. I don't like to let myself fall into a hole of seeing, you know, oh, well, this thing's not possible, so I'm just going to give up and it means I shouldn't do it. It just means that, you know, there's another way around it. So it's just, you have to do some critical thinking to figure out what that is. But that's kind of how I've been since I can remember. So even in my current jobs now or like career, I'm always thinking, well, if I don't do this thing, what would happen? And is the outcome of what happens in scenario A worse or is it better than if I did scenario B? And I feel like a lot of times my choices end up being really risky choices that most people are like, oh, I would never do that, or like, that's crazy. But every time I've done the riskier thing, it has always worked out for me in the end, because I'm thinking beyond just the immediate right now. I'm trying to think ahead of like, well, you know, if I do get this thing, look at how it's going to pay off for me. So yeah, it's going to be worth the risk. And if I don't do it, I could stay here where I feel comfortable and safe. But then that also holds me back in what I can do. So I would rather take the risky thing now when I'm at a time in my life, you know, I don't have kids or I'm not married. So if I'm going to take risk, I might as well do it one right now. And so far it's been working out well, but it's one of those things where it's like, you don't know what's going to happen, but you just got to take a chance on yourself and do it.
It's so true. And I think a lot of what you're saying is being tactical. There's one thing, throwing everything to the wind and just, you know, crossing your fingers and hoping for the best. That at least gives you a bit of peace of mind as well. It's not just a question of, I really believe in myself and I know I'm going to go far. It's looking at the tools and the strategies, as you said. A lot of the fear around taking the next steps into an area that you're unfamiliar with, and particularly around areas that aren't known to, I don't know if you had anyone within your immediate circle or within your friend group that worked in the space. We're finding that a lot of our cultures do not have an uncle or a best friend's mum who sits in a position within a studio or something. So it really is like you're looking into the dark and you're trying to figure out a way. And that is terrifying. It is terrifying. And I can see how parents and family and friends can be skeptical and afraid. But the way you're looking at it brings a sense of, okay, this is where I am, this is where I hope to be, and then breaking it down and saying, here's the different solves that I would need to perform should this outcome happen. And at the very least, act out of planned approaches rather than just, I have the faith.
Yeah.
I think sometimes it's all well and good to do manifestations and speak it into existence, but there is a hustle, there is a lot of hard work. And then within that, it's looking at what tools and resources do you have and how do you like exploit them to the best of your capability? And then doing that over and over and over again. And I think that's why you've been so successful with that mindset. So I really appreciate you sharing this technique with us on Culture in the Craft and to all the listeners, because that is Gem talking right there.
Yeah, I try to, I don't know, for me, it's like always looking at it from a positive standpoint. I think it's very easy to get like wrapped up in the negatives of things. And I think another big thing, especially for people who, like you're saying, they don't have that direct connection into some big studio or school. I feel like a lot of people just kind of already feel very written off. And so we don't tend to ask for things that we want. And I feel like that works against a lot of us, but especially like many of us coming from, you know, different diverse backgrounds, you know, we're not used to getting what we want. So we're not asking for what we want. But a lot of times that's a big part of it. It's just asking and being very clear and upfront, like, this is the thing that I want. You know, what can you do about that? Or is this possible for me? Big part of it is just asking. The second thing is, like you're saying, is that hustle. You know, I feel like inspiration and motivation and those quotes, they're all good to a point for like trying to keep you going. But if you're not doing any action behind it, it's just kind of like all theory at this point. You know, it's all just, it's like you're just thinking constantly. And especially with, if you're a creative, like a lot of us, we're always thinking about that project we want to do. It's just, it's in our head and it's so perfect. But until you actually start doing anything, like physically doing anything to make it happen, it's just going to always stay in your head. And, you know, even that's something I had to really push myself with recently, which is like, okay, I know I want to do this thing. What's the smallest thing that I could do that would start helping me get towards this thing? And it's just like, breaking it down into those small steps and really trying to figure out, how do I make this realistic and possible? Because it's like, it's good to have the really big dream that we want to go for and want to try and achieve. But sometimes it's so big that you don't even know where to start. You know, it's like, I want to do like 1% better today. And if I can just find something that'll help me get that 1%. So I think it's just kind of like a mindset shift. All those small steps, they compound and they add up to something much bigger. So if you're doing something small for 2 minutes every day, starting now, within a year, the difference of where you started and where you will be is going to be so much bigger. And you're going to be surprised at what you've done. So I try and push people to approach it more like that. I'm hoping it works and people take the advice, but I know it can be hard to get yourself thinking that way.
It's always hard to begin. Mm-hmm. And then each day you chip away at it. I feel that if it's something that you really value, then what else are you going to invest your time in, really? Mm-hmm. It's like, if there are other things, then maybe it's a question of, okay, am I going to hedge my bets in one sense, or do I spread my own energies? And I think it's the same as you said before, that it depends on people's particular situations. And I know it's very easy to say it, both of us are now in the industry, but we all had to start from somewhere. And it is those little steps that you take each day. And then when you have seen a month and then 6 months and then a year, and you gather and collect all the tools that you've got so far and you implement them in the next thing and the next and just keep chipping away. It doesn't feel spectacular in the here and now, and every day can be tricky and difficult and hard. But yeah, don't underestimate looking at things in bits and putting them all together over a longer period of time.
Exactly.
With all that wisdom coming out, how do you find in a management / production sense, in terms of knowledge and learning, what do you think we have as production people to make sure that we stay on top of our game and we're aware of what's going on?
I would say for production people, for us, since it's kind of harder to have that. Say goodbye.
Okay, part one is done with Tiara Little from Netflix Animation. Join us back here for part two very soon.
If you've got an idea you'd like us to discuss or have any questions for the show, you can reach us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram on CultureXCraft. Remember to subscribe, give the podcast a like, and feel free to leave a comment too. We'd love to hear from you. All your help allows us to help others like us fill creative spaces with diverse faces.